Welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday, the actuality news show, offering unique insights and in-depth analysis featuring South Africa's top business leaders, newsmakers, and analysts for today's professionals. Your host, Jeremy Metz.
Hello and welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday. I'm Jeremy Maggs with a brisk 30 minutes on the latest in South African and global news. We are live and then up as a podcast. I'll bring you insightful interviews with key business and political figures, prominent newsmakers and leading experts, all in a concise, informative update. It's Tuesday, March the 26th, and coming up on the programme, Johannesburg's mayor on the water crisis that he says isn't one. More on the big ANC MKV registration fight as the ruling party loses. Concerned doctors engaging the health minister over NHI, the impact of climate change on food inflation, and why buying local has never been more important, but there are concerns over price and quality. Overnight, some parts of Johannesburg still without water due to work on a burst pipe. The pipe affects suburbs that are recovering after weeks of water outages that occur due to power trips at the Eikenhof pump station. So what's the bigger picture here, and is the situation under control? On our last program, we asked via our online poll if there was a crisis or not. Around 70% of residents who participated said yes, a sizable number saying the issue is one of lack of engineering expertise. A little earlier, I was in conversation with the city's mayor, Kabelo Gwamanda, who is a lot more bullish than most of his ratepayers.
We have been able to successfully restore water. We're just finalizing an issue with a burst pipe in the Linden area, but 99% of the challenge has been fixed. However, the current situation cannot entirely be interpreted as a permanent solution. What the city of Johannesburg needs is to embark on a wide-scale audit of our 12,500 pipelines so that we can be able to replace what needs to be replaced and to refurbish what needs to be refurbished.
Mayor Gwamanda, when do you think that audit will take place then? And how complicated is it?
It does require a scientific approach. So what has happened in the past is that Joburg Water has undertaken an audit as an entity. However, due to the wide variety of contributing factors towards the water situations, which include but not limited to our city power infrastructure, the issue has then been escalated to the office of the COO of the co-administration under his special projects unit, so that they can correlate the audit that has been conducted by Joburg Water with the one that they are currently conducting. We will be in the next council sitting table a comprehensive report on the status of the infrastructure in the city of Johannesburg, especially relating to our water infrastructure. And we'll also include in that initiatives that we have done successfully in the immediate, the plans that we have for midterm and overall 10-year plan on how we are going to then expand our infrastructure and ensure that the residents in the city of Johannesburg do not face this situation again.
The trouble, of course, is this is going to be very expensive. Does the city have the money to do that?
So over the past couple of weeks, I have been engaging with other spheres of government, but Joburg Water has also been engaged in an engagement with National Treasury, so that we can establish a triple P model that does not take the lengthy process in which it ordinarily does. National Treasury is going to assist in us reducing the time frames. The only aspect that was outstanding at the time was the commercial aspect of this particular business model that we need to implement, especially for water treatment plants that are required for the city of Johannesburg to have an alternative water supply and not rely entirely on rainwater for the supply of water in the city of Johannesburg.
But the situation right now is that you don't have that commitment yet from Treasury, do you?
Not yet, because we need to, you know, local government is highly regulated, and hence we need to get that approval specifically from National Treasury, although they only comment at times and they do not want to define a business model on behalf of a municipality. They will make comments here and there, but ultimately they would want you to take a decision and then account for it at the end of the day.
I want to push you a little bit further on the numbers and about the ability to spend the money that you have. The city's current water and sanitation infrastructure backlog, you will be aware, is estimated to be something in the region of 25 to 27 billion rand. Yet, Mayor Gwamanda, you're only spending a billion rand annually on water and sanitation. Why is there this huge disconnect?
So, as you would know, that the business model at municipalities, it includes revenue generated from water sales, revenue generated from electricity sales, and revenue generated from rates and taxes. So a percentage which is required by legislation for us to allocate to infrastructure has not been done in the past couple of years. Hence, you would find that Joburg Water and City Power are way below the margins. But in this particular financial year, we are going to start readdressing that particular aspect so that we can begin to direct our investment as a city first towards our infrastructure. I think at the time, and I'm not speaking on behalf of previous administrations, they were, I think, inundated with expanding infrastructure and access to water and electricity over and above the infrastructure maintenance, of which it's mandatory for us to do. So I think the bulk of our budget was directed to new infrastructure, especially in disadvantaged communities or black and previously disadvantaged communities that needed to have the same access. So this administration, based on what has been done already, because the expansion, in fact, of the city is primarily as a result of property developers, and they have the financial means for them to be able to pay for bulk infrastructure. So for us as a city, it is of paramount importance that we, like you had alluded in your latter statement, begin to invest according to legislative requirements.
Mayor, I'm curious to know why you or your office said the water situation in Johannesburg wasn't a crisis. You have to concede that for many residents, hundreds of thousands of people, it was and in many respects remains a crisis.
The issue here is access to water and the disruption that had occurred. And as a city, we understand that it can't be tolerated that communities would go on without water for several days at a time. Although we understood what the contributing factors were, and we had a plan in place that had been initiated to remedy the situation, the challenge in the main was the delay in the restoration of water. Being without water is a problem that is a challenge, in fact, that we cannot water down. We cannot dismiss, and we cannot try to defend the city against. But for us to go to the extreme extent of saying it's an overall crisis, because the interpretation of a crisis and us working on a solution to remedy, we, in our view, feel that it is not synonymous.
All right, I'm not going to argue the semantics of the word crisis with you, but you will concede then that you had a plan and the plan didn't work or didn't work optimally.
If you remember that on the 3rd and on the 4th, we experienced these challenges. And although City Power did attend to the situation, the weather conditions at the time were of an extreme nature, and as such contributed towards another disruption that occurred. And we do acknowledge that whenever infrastructure fails, government needs to account in that regard. but by virtue of us having knowledge, a completeness of the challenge and how we are working on remedying that challenge is the message that we wanted to deliver to the residents, as opposed to us taking a view that we are being dismissive. It was, in fact, a way for us to instill a sense of confidence enough to understand that the city is working in the remedial actions required for the water to be restored.
I'm going to leave it there. Mayor Gwamanda, thank you very much indeed for joining me.
MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
Today, the Electoral Court handing down judgment in the Gauteng High Court on whether the Nkontowesizwe party should be deregistered and barred from contesting the upcoming election. The ANC telling the court that the party's registration was unlawful because it had submitted fraudulent signatures in its initial application to be registered as a political party. Well, there has been movement on this story. I'm joined now by political writer and commentator Sanusha Naidu. Sanusha, a very warm welcome to you. The ANC has lost first round to Jacob Zuma, the court saying the application held no water. What do you make of it?
Good day to you, Jeremy, and good day to the listeners. I mean, I think it's something that is quite important in terms of the ruling. I think the judgment in itself tells you that the application that the ANC made was kind of very light in the way that the electoral court justices have actually put it forward, to say that the application came in terms of when the timing, when it was actually made, kind of actually made it quite difficult for the ANC in kind of having any other judgment in terms of whether or not they were able to convince the court beyond a reasonable doubt that the MK party should be deregistered. And it was quite telling in the judgment itself, because it went to the actual heart of the question of why the ANC made this application in the first place, and secondly, whether or not the series of events that led up to this application and what the judges had noted in their judgment on the basis of when certain applications were made and why were they made at the times that they made. Was it enough time frames that they could have made it? They took a long time, they procrastinated, they delayed, and they couldn't make the electoral court couldn't come to that decision that the ANC had proved that the MK party had registered illegitimately and needed to be delegitimized and deregistered.
Sanusha, what do you really think the primary motivation was? Was it procedural, as the ANC was suggesting, or do you think the party is simply running scared?
Well, I think it's more a fact of the latter, that they needed to, not necessarily running scared, but they needed to also put out there that they couldn't have this happen, in the sense that it comes to what would be tomorrow's the next part of this case, which is on the actual symbols of the party, the actual identity of the MKP. And I think to a large extent, this is not just about, you know, whether the ANC feels very scared, or it feels as if it's being squeezed in terms of what this party means in the context of this election, but it's also about trying to say, well, we are still in control, that this is part of our identity, and it cannot be that somebody forms a party like the MKP and then becomes almost a kind of not a symbolic, but kind of a kind of extension of the ANC, but in terms of the fact that its identity is now being defined in two different ways. And you saw the supporters outside of the court saying that, you know, we're not going to take this lying down. They tried to push us away. They tried to unravel us in a way, but we won this round. And I think that's what it really is. It's about the heart and soul of the ANC. It's about what the ANC as an organization, as a political movement, as a kind of liberation struggle and a former liberation struggle movement turned political party, it's losing its vitality, so to speak, by the creation of the MKP.
And as a result of this decision, there is no doubt that between these two parties, it's now gloves off.
Absolutely. And you can see it. I mean, when you listen to the former president, you know, Jacob Zuma, when this case was being presented before the electoral court, and you saw how he explained the formation of Umkhonto Sizwe, he explained that it didn't actually belong to anybody. It's not somebody that can claim this kind of identity over and this kind of intellectual property. And I think these are parts and parcels of what the ANC is beginning to find is unraveling it in many ways, that it's losing that ability of its identational power and its intellectual power and its intellectual identity.
Sanusha Naidu, thank you very much indeed.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
Now, there is no doubt that in South Africa, it's been one of the hottest decades in years. And my next guest says the impact of the El Nino effect should also come as no surprise when it refers to consumer inflation and the outlook thereof. The heat, she says, is disrupting agriculture after weak production in 2023. I don't need to tell you that food prices have been a major contributor to the stubborn consumer price index inflation rate. Zandile Makhoba is with us now, economist at Liberty. And first of all, then, why is this phenomenon having such a significant impact on food prices?
Jeremy, we're, you know, kind of suffering through these heat waves, and temperatures in South Africa have reached heights that we've possibly not seen in our lived history. And there's no doubt that that's going to have an impact on the agricultural produce. We saw just even last year, agricultural production declining by 12.2% measured in GDP. So the climate element in the agricultural space is definitely something that should concern us. And with us entering an El Nino, drier conditions, very little rainfall, we're already starting to see how maize prices are starting to spike. And it's, you know, it's not a blanket effect on all agricultural produce, but definitely some of the key ones that are key sustenance for South Africans really working into that CPI element and driving up that food inflation element.
And the concern one would have, I imagine, is that it has a domino effect down the value chain on the price that you pay once you take something off the shelf.
Absolutely. So maize prices eventually become our mealie meal prices, a key sustenance for South African households. But we can see this now also playing out in other things. So manufactured food production is one, but also just in terms of households then balance out expenditure. We know that in lower income households, a lot of the budget will now turn towards food affordability, and then it reduces expenditure in other segments of the economy. But also while food prices then impact the overall inflation, it does reduce the likelihood of us getting that interest rate cut from the Reserve Bank. So we then start to see how food inflation impacts on things like interest rates and affordability of housing, as an example. A lot of households today are not able to meet their bond payments because interest rates have risen significantly. Many new buyers actually opting to sell and not owning properties. So what begins with an El Nino eventually becomes something that impacts the real estate industry and has a really wide impact in terms of what happens in the economy.
And there's very little room for maneuverability as far as the central bank is concerned. So the effectiveness of their current monetary policy is very constrained when you talk about external factors like climate change. Or is there an alternative approach that they might be considering?
I think the Reserve Bank's mandate is very clear. It's around monetary stability and using the interest rate to do that. And it is debatable as to whether it should remain that way. But I think a lot of what needs to happen in the South African economy is not just looking at monetary policy to address inflation, but to start pivoting to other areas that can help manage price changes. So our trade relations, for example, play a key role when we are struggling to provide locally produced goods. Do we have the right partners that will be able to import from at reasonable prices? So there are maybe fiscal elements we can look at, maybe a bigger role in the private sector that we can look at that can actually assist the economy to keep prices low without looking at monetary policy as the only way to manage inflation.
And Zandile Makhoba, it's a very serious issue, because if we have the situation with either food inflation or scarcity of essential goods, there is the propensity, the potential for social unrest, which would need to be preemptively managed.
I believe so, Jeremy. The more difficult it is for households to manage those expenses, especially in an environment where we have low job absorption at the unskilled labor level, people are going to, it becomes an antagonizing thing. And if we just come back to the interest rate element, at high interest rates, affluent households generally will gain because they are maybe in a saving space and are actually earning more for those investments and savings than ordinary households would. And at your middle class and lower income household, that high interest rate is now conflicting with your grocery bill, your likelihood to keep your car. It does increase tensions between different classes in the economy, and we don't know how that might turn out.
I am going to leave it there, and thank you very much indeed for that very sober assessment. Zandile Makhoba from Liberty.
MoneyWeb at midday. For all your up-to-date stories.
The South African Medical Association is now on a legal collision course with government over NHI. Joining us now is Dr. Mvuyisi Mzukwa, the South African Medical Association chairperson. Doctor, a very warm welcome. And are you still sceptical then about the NHI Bill's capacity to achieve its stated goals?
Yes, we are still skeptical about the bill achieving its goals. Like we have said in our previous submissions, that we support the objectives of the bill, but we don't believe that the bill itself is capable of delivering us out of the quagmire that we find ourselves in. We had always been clear our concerns around what is troubling us as the profession. So when we had a meeting with the minister, we tabled those concerns again to the minister.
And do you believe government is taking your concerns seriously, or do you think the positions in this respect are becoming more entrenched?
Well, we do not believe that the government is listening to us at this point in time, because issues that we have raised have not been addressed. So we think that government is going to push ahead regardless of our concerns. And that is a huge concern from the South African Medical Association point of view, because you are going into a policy reform without the backup of the profession. And that is going to lead to so much uncertainty in such a way that others may have this, they've done already, leave the country, and some may even opt out of the medical profession, because we know now what is happening with government. Just recently, Telkom has not been paid by government in Gauteng.
Are you starting to hear whispers in that respect from your members already?
Already, we've had a recent media reports of many of our colleagues who have already left for Canada. And I know that people are saying, why are you leaving your own NHI and going to another NHI in another country? But what people forget is that it's not only about salaries, it's about the working conditions as well. It's about leadership and governance of those countries. So that's what people are looking for. It's about security in the workplace and many other issues that are raised by South African doctors.
Do you think, or is there a possibility of a compromise, at least a short-term compromise, being agreed to by the medical association and by government?
Well, hopeful that the delay by the president is a consideration of deep concerns that have been raised by the profession. We hope that the president is going to take into consideration those concerns, but also make a platform for true engagements on these matters so that we find each other. But like I said, if the government is not willing to listen to the profession, we are going to go ahead as well and challenge this in the courts of law, you know, not the objectives of the bill, but certain aspects of the bill that we feel unhappy about.
So what specific aspects would you challenge legally?
Well, the fact that, first of all, you know, some clauses where, first of all, the issue of people not wanting or having no option in terms of medical aids, the role of the private sector. We are saying, you know, it's a choice that people must have in a democratic dispensation. If you have a choice to take your child to a private hospital because in the state, children are drowning in pit toilets, and you have a choice with security of a private security when police are not, when their vans are not are broken down, they cannot do their jobs. You must also have a choice of private healthcare in case government does not carry its mandate appropriately. Like what we see now in the UK, where the system is falling on its face because government was ambitious in terms of wanting to run this NHS on their own. So I do believe that we have feeling the similar, we're in a similar situation where we say we must learn from other countries now and implement those lessons in our South African context.
Let me ask you this in conclusion and bluntly, how close are you to going to court, and have you told government of your intention?
No, we have not told government of our intentions because there is no act. We can only attempt to do that, or we can do that after the president has signed the bill into law.
But it's still under consideration.
It is under consideration as we speak.
Dr. Mzukwa, thank you very much indeed. From the South African Medical Association, the chairperson.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
And finally on the program, proudly South Africa's 12th annual Buy Local Summit and Expo is underway, but are we really doing that? Are we looking inwards, and are we buying local? And also, perhaps more pressingly, is the online retail community coming to the party? Joining us now on the program is the Chief Executive Officer of Proudly South African, Eustace Mashimbe. A very warm welcome to you. And let's go straight to the online retailers' side of this discussion. What are your specific concerns?
So, I mean, and some of the concerns we have, Jeremy, and good afternoon to you and your listeners, include the fact that, you know, when you have these new platforms, and I'm calling them new because they're new to our markets, coming into South Africa, especially now, we're not just dealing with Shein. Is it Shein or Shein? You then also have Temu coming in, and some of these regulations that are in place allow for them to be able to break up the orders, and then they don't attract the required duties, they don't attract the required tariffs and levies, and so it's really an unfair advantage that they are now getting, which then takes away from that which a buyer sitting in the country would, you know, have chosen to buy a product made in South Africa, and by their buying that, because then price becomes the determining factor.
So what kind of protection then are you looking for?
So the kind of protection we're looking for is for the regulations that are in place to be looked at and revised such that those practices can be nipped, nipped in the bud as quickly as possible. Because once you then start discouraging the breaking up of those orders that are then delivered in the country at entry point, then you know that even the smallest of items, despite what the one bringing it in might try to do, will still be levied with the required tariffs and duties. And then that will then help solve the problem.
Is it ultimately, though, not a decision by the consumer? They will always be motivated by quality and price. And if local manufacturers can beat that, that's where they'll go.
No, it's true. And I agree with you fully. Price becomes a determining factor. But in this instance, we are fighting a losing battle because even where our guys are trying to even match those prices, that aspect makes it difficult. I mean, a lot of it for us is tantamount to dumping, Jeremy, because the prices at which these things are sent into the country don't make sense economically and otherwise, and and the studies and research that shows that no one can produce those products at that level, even when you have economies of scale achieved at a maximum. And so we are just saying, let's try to at least level the playing ground as best as we can, even if you don't achieve that same price point, but at least make it easy for a consumer to say, because I'm economically patriotic, let me rather spend 2 rands more than spend 10 rands more when you compare the two prices.
Do you think you're getting a sympathetic ear from government?
We think we're being heard, but we think the pace at which this is being addressed is slower than what we want. And we are using the Buy Local Summit and Expo hosted today to address some of it. We have a panel discussion coincidentally starting half an hour from now, which delves into just this conversation local e-commerce platforms, as well as experts in the field, who are then going to help us craft a position paper of some sort that can then go to government with that which we have been saying, but with a stronger voice, because then we have aggregated the views of those who are part of this compact that we're trying to form, a social compact of some sort, which says, jobs are on the line, clothing and textile industry has suffered the most from this, towns like Hammarsdale and Newcastle, which used to predominantly make our clothes, suffered. We deindustrialized quickly over the years, and we seem to be going back there because of this fast fashion thing that happens on these platforms.
All right. We look forward to seeing that position paper. Eustace Mashimbe, thank you very much indeed, the Chief Executive Officer of Proudly South African. And on our online poll today, exactly that issue. Do you support Buy Local? Yes, no, or you are motivated and you're concerned always about quality and price? If you have a view on that, we'd like to hear from you. Go to MoneyWeb on Twitter X or on our LinkedIn page. MoneyWeb at midday. We are live at noon weekdays. We're then up as a podcast. Goodbye to you and thank you for listening.
Listen to the daily live stream of MoneyWeb at midday or download episodes on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts and Spotify, or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.